Really, really a pleasure to be back together. I hope that everyone had a wonderful, enjoying, somewhat relaxing, and exhausting day. That's all the emotions I feel all at once. I just want to pick up with one quick anecdote from what we spoke about last night. Last night we were talking about doing everything in life in a purposeful way, doing things that really have a sense of mission and a sense of purpose. So today I had the opportunity to go rock climbing with my children. And it was a wonderful experience, and because I and some of the other adults there had to tend to the kids and help them up, help them down, so everybody else ended up going up on the rock except for me. And then the rock climbing instructor turns to me and he says, "Hey, I've noticed that you are the only one in our group that still has not gone up. You're not leaving here before you go up." I said, "I'm really good. I'm fine. I'm exhausted enough." He says, No, you're not fine." I said, "Look, I stick to the things I'm good at. I don't try things I'm not good at." He said, "Well, how will you ever know? You got to push your limits." I said, "Okay, I'll go up on the rock, make you happy." I go up on the rock, I start climbing up, and I'm literally two steps in. He says, "You're a rabbi, right?" I said, "Yes, how do you know?" He says, "Well, when I came to pick everybody up this morning, they told me that's the rabbi." He says, "Well, I had my bar mitzvah in Milwaukee many, many years ago in a conservative temple." I said, "Okay." So we start engaging in conversation. He takes me down, and I didn't get further than that. That was about it. And we had a whole discussion, and I said to him, "You know, growing up, what exactly did you know? What did you not know? What did you learn? What did you not learn?" He started talking to me a little bit, making some confessions, and then he started to say that he doesn't believe in organized religion anymore, and he's giving me all of his different ideas of what he believes in and why theologically he feels he's a little bit distant right now. And I basically asked him, I said, "Well, what if I asked you to do something that was probably a very simple activity?" He says, "There's nothing in Judaism that's simple." So I told him, "How about if I sent you Shabbat candles for the year and the time that you're supposed to light every week in Montana, would you do so?" So I think I could do that. I told him, "You know, I live in New York. There are many, many people lighting Shabbat candles every week in New York. And maybe sometimes you get the feeling as if, what is my contribution really doing anything to change the Jewish people?" I said, "Think about it. How many Jews are there in the entire state of Montana that are going to be lighting Shabbat candles every Friday? You may be one of the only select few who will be doing that. Imagine what kind of contribution you can make." So we continued on to talk. He gave me his word. He's going to do it. If I send it to him, he texted me his address. And we continued on with the conversation. Then he asked me, he says, "You know, Judaism seems to be all about restrictions. So why would a person want to be involved in this? I don't really understand." I said to him, "Can you take a look? I'm here with my 5 children. There was another family on the trip who was there with 6 children." I told him, "Look around at the 11 kids who are here. Do any of them look like they're being oppressed? Or do these seem like wholesome families?" He says, "Tell you the truth, it's fascinating." I asked him, "Why would I want to make my children suffer and do something that I found to be oppressive? Wouldn't I want them to have a good life? And look, it seems they are having a good life. They're very happy. And it's not me. Look at this other family. They're also very happy." Anyway, we got into a whole discussion, and here you see the hashgacha, even beyond. I mentioned last night, we were in Australia about 4 months ago. Never in a million years did I think I would travel to Australia. Even once I was there, I'm thinking, what am I doing here? I'm on the other side of the world. It's wonderful to be here, but this is really a very, very big trip just to teach Torah. And again, it's a privilege to teach Torah, but it was a big trip for me and for my wife as well. On our way out, our hosts gave me a book. And the book is something I didn't have a chance to pick up over the last 4 months because I've been busy with work and busy teaching back at home and doing what I do. So I said to myself, you know, he gave me this book. It was so nice of him. It looks interesting. Let me try to bring it on the trip. I'll read it on the plane if I can. Lo and behold, we had time on the plane when the kids were actually calm and quiet and everyone was good. So I pulled out the book. It's a book by Rabbi Jonathan Sacks called Celebrating Life. It's an amazing book. It's basically the weekly column that he wrote in the equivalent of the New York Times in England. He wrote a column every week, and they ultimately compiled it into a book. And this book is basically his explanation of why it is that he feels being an Orthodox Jew is a reason to celebrate life. Being an Orthodox Jew is something that you feel gives meaning to what life is all about. And this is his explanation not to the Jewish community, but to the entire community in Great Britain. And I said to this man, you know, come to think of it, I was just on the plane yesterday, and I was reading this book that I haven't had the chance to pick up until I got here. And this is exactly the book that you would appreciate, because you're asking, isn't Jewish life oppressive? Isn't it difficult to be part of an Orthodox community? And I said, some may say that. Others may say, if you look at it with the right glasses and you look at it with the right perspective, it's liberating. And it's a fascinating lifestyle that you may want to think about. Anyway, so I ordered him, so far, the book, Celebrating Life, the Shabbat candles for the next year, and you never know. Thinking about going with mission and with purpose, I said to myself, maybe that's why I'm in Montana. I don't know. Maybe just to have the opportunity to connect with one Jew who has never connected before, and to have the opportunity to have a meaningful conversation with someone who is so deeply craving it. It's just something that we all have the opportunity to do wherever we are. So I wanted to continue with the theme from last night. We started to talk about the Navi Yeshaya when he says, "Su'u marom einechem u'ru'u mi bara eile." We look up at the world and we think about, how could it be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the Ribono Shel Olam, that God Himself created this world? This is so overwhelmingly powerful to consider that. The truth is, when you look in the Rambam, both in the Mishnah Torah, as well as in the Sefer HaMitzvos, which is his compilation of all the 613 mitzvos, which, by the way, is a great and difficult task. You say, we take it as a given that there are 613 commandments, 613 mitzvos. It's not so clear. And what exactly is counted as part of that grouping, and what perhaps is left out, is not simple at all. But the Rambam puts it all together, and he tells us what he believes are the 613 mitzvos. The third mitzvah, both in the Yad HaChazaka, which is the Rambam's Halacha Sefer, as well as the Sefer HaMitzvos, is what he writes, the mitzvah of Avas Hashem. The mitzvah to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now that's fascinating. It's something we talk about every single day. V'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha, v'chal levavcha, u'v'chal nafshecha, u'v'chal miyodecha. Now you ask yourself, how could one even begin to attempt to come to a sense of love or appreciation of an entity that they really have no connection with? So it's easier to connect with people that we interact with every day, that we speak to, that we feel, that we touch, that we have the ability to communicate with. But when you're dealing with an entity that we really have no communication with at all, now of course we daven, but we're not living in a time where God communicates back with us in a way that we easily can understand. Obviously God communicates with us all the time, but it's hard to really tap into those messages. So the Rambam challenges us and he asks, excuse me, how is it that a person has the ability to connect to this primary obligation of Avas Hashem? And it's something we talk about every single day. So obviously it's extremely fundamental, it's very important. So how do you do that? So the Rambam writes, he suggests what he believes is the formula. And he says there are two ways. Number one, says the Rambam, V'hu shenizbonein v'nistakel b'mitzvosa v'tzivuyav. Now one way is to study and to understand all of the commandments. Obviously, if God commanded you to do this, and you understand why it is that He told you to do so, then you'll come to a greater understanding of God Himself. That makes sense. Okay. That makes sense to us. But then the Rambam adds on that that is only one way to come to a sense of Avas Hashem. The second way he writes is, we should think about Pu'ulosav. We should think about His actions, His workings. Now, what exactly is that? It's not exactly clear what he means, but in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah, which is where the Rambam tells us the fundamentals of Jewish life, there the Rambam broadens and develops this theme, and he explains it a little bit more in depth. And he says, Yesodei Yesodos Ve'amur HaChachmos Leida She'esh HaMatzoh. He says, the most fundamental thing that we need to remember is that there is some entity in the world that initiated all that we have, that has created this experience that all of us are seeing. He is the one who put everybody into existence. He is the one who provides for all those who are here in the world. And he says this is what it means when we say Ein Od Melvado. Ein Od Melvado doesn't mean God is the only entity in the world. All of us are here. So what do you mean Ein Od Melvado? It means we have to believe that there is nothing else in the world that brought us here. It is only because of the grace of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Himself that all of us were created. But then he writes, one has to think about all that goes on in the inner workings of the world. One has to think about the galaxies, the orbit, the function, the seasons, everything that just seems to go perfectly. And you take all of that and he says, you have a system that just keeps on rotating and going around, and they can predict now, in 25 years from now, when there's going to be a solar eclipse, a lunar eclipse. How can that be? It's because obviously there's a system, and there's a science to it, and it makes sense. Writes the Rambam, do you believe that there's a sivuv without a mesoviv? Do you believe that there's a rotation without somebody who's rotating it? And therefore the Rambam says, by thinking about all of this, it gives us an opportunity to come to a sense of Avas Hashem. How so? The Rambam writes in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah again, Hei Chu HaDerech LaAhavaso. How does one come to this understanding of V'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha B'chalavavcha? B'shah She'yizbonein HaAdam B'maisav U'B'bruav HaNiflaim HaGdolim. When somebody experiences the power of nature, says the Rambam, V'yira Mehem Chachmaso She'en LaErech. And you see the Chachma, you see the brilliance, and you're completely overwhelmed and amazed by what it is that you're experiencing, what it is that you see, with all the intricacies, and with all the complexity, and with the elaborate nature of everything that we see scientifically that's in front of us in this world, says the Rambam, that is an incredible way to come to a sense of Avas Hashem. And that's something that maybe we don't often focus on. Maybe when we're not here, out in this kind of atmosphere, we don't have the opportunity to clear our heads and think about what it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put out in the world. I showed my kids today, just look down at the river that's in front of us. The clear water. Look at the clear water. When was the last time you saw water like this? When was the last time you've seen mountains like this? And you ask yourself, does this not make a person come to an understanding of how overwhelmingly grateful they should be to the person who obviously made sure, to the entity that made sure that all of this sivuv, all of these rotations, all of this reality is something that is clearly run by a mesoviv. And says the Rambam, this is what David HaMelech means, tzama l'chal nafshi, that it's almost as if he has a thirst to understand more, a thirst for knowledge, a thirst for that connection, a thirst to really come to a greater understanding of what it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has put up for all of us in this world. There's an amazing statement in the Gemara. The Gemara writes in Masechet Shabbos. I don't know if everybody here has a mathematical brain, certainly not at this time of night after a day like today, but the Gemara does say as follows. Kol ha-yodea l'chashe b'tkufos ha-mazalos ve'eno choshev. Somebody who has the ability to be machashe means to compute, to calculate, and to understand the tkufos mazalos, how it is that the constellations work, and how it is that the galaxy is structured, how it is that the planets rotate. Somebody who has the ability to understand all of that mathematically, Allah v'kasev omer, on him, the pasuk says in the Navi Yeshaya, ve'espor l'Hashem lo yabitu, u'maisei adav lo ro. If you have the ability, the intellectual capacity to understand all of that and you choose not to delve into it, says the Navi Yeshaya, you have something so brilliant in front of you and you're choosing just to laugh it off. You're choosing not to get into it. You're choosing to cheat yourself of that opportunity to experience this godliness, says the Navi Yeshaya. How sad that is for us. How sad that is for the individual who chooses to overlook it and not to focus on it at all. And the Gemara then goes further, talks about this theme that we should spend time and we should try to do that. What came to mind as I saw all the beautiful wonders of nature and as we all continue to see them was a pasuk in Sefer Iyov. Iyov is a very complicated sefer. Iyov is a very, very intricate story. Iyov is one of the most, probably the most tragic figure in all of Tanakh. Iyov is the one who had the greatest life. Iyov had everything in the world. He was a wealthy man who had healthy children, and he had everything that one could ever ask for. God says about him that he is the greatest human being. It's not something that other people said about him, and maybe he was faking it. God himself declared that Iyov is the greatest person alive. So there's a lot to talk about in Sefer Iyov, and much of it is extremely depressing. It's a very, very difficult Sefer to read. But at one point in Sefer Iyov, after everything turns around and God explains to him everything that went on in his experience of his own life, he writes the following, and he says, L'shema ozen shmaticha va'ata eini ra'asicha. What that means is, Rashi there explains, until now, I understood that there was a God in theory. I went to school, I was educated, I heard a whole lot of concepts, I was raised in a religious family, and I was brought up to believe in X, Y, or Z, whatever it is. But all of that was l'shma ozen shmaticha. Until now, it was just, I heard from other people, people explained to me, I was maybe raised in such a way, in such a community, in such a schooling. Ve'ata eini ra'asicha. I feel blessed, says Eov, that at this juncture in my life, I have the ability to experience it with my own eyes. And to see it unfold, and to have an understanding as to what it is that I'm experiencing and what it is that I'm watching in front of my eyes is an entirely new experience. That's what I was thinking about. You know, we say in theory, Avas Hashem is very important. And every day we talk about V'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha, and it's beautiful, and it's a great sentiment. But at the same time, there are moments in our lives when we have the opportunity to take it up a notch and to say, no, this is not only something that I've maybe been taught or maybe learned or maybe heard along the way. This is something, V'ata Eine Ra'asicha. At this point, it's something that I really fully appreciate because my eyes actually see it. I see Avas Hashem. I see godliness in the world. And this is something that is an overwhelming feeling. So I see that people are tired, and maybe we'll wrap it up quickly. In honor of the Enoch of the Chassam Sofer, let me say a word from the Chassam Sofer, where he writes, there was a Gemara in Maseches Baba Basra. The Gemara tells a story about Avraham Avinu. Sometimes when you get up to an Agadat Gemara, it's hard to understand what is this meant to teach us, what is it all about. Obviously, there's something deeper behind the simple understanding of the story, and it's difficult to really interpret it properly and make it meaningful. But the Chassam Sofer does just that about this story. And he writes that Avraham Avinu obviously was an amazing personality. Avraham Avinu came to an understanding of God on his own. So there's a discrepancy in the Medrash how old he was, but whatever it is, he didn't go to school for this. This was something he came to on his own understandings. But the Medrash then says, I'm sorry, the Gemara tells us, Margalis Tova Haisa Tuliya Betzavaro Shal Avraham Avinu. There was some kind of precious gem, a jewel, that was affixed to the tzavar, to the neck, to the throat of Avraham Avinu. So he wore a necklace, it sounds like. And, excuse me, Kal Chole Haro Oso, anyone who was sick and looked and gazed at that necklace that he was wearing, Hayam Israpi, it was miraculous. They were healed. Now there was a crisis. What's the crisis? Avraham Avinu didn't live forever. So for the first time in his generation, people got sick, and they're looking around. What do we do now? Says the Gemara, no problem. Crisis averted. Kishames, when Avraham Avinu died, Tala b'Gilgal Achama. God took that necklace, he took that jewel, that gem that was on the neck of Avraham Avinu, and he put it into the sun. So what does that mean? The Chassam Sofer and others are bothered. How do we understand this? He took a necklace, and the necklace was so miraculous. Anybody who was sick used to come to Avraham Avinu and get better just by looking at it. And then after Avraham Avinu died, he put it up in the sun. It just doesn't really add up. How do you understand it? The Chassam Sofer quotes from others. It's not his own interpretation. He adds to it, but he quotes from others the following beautiful insight where he says, what does it mean that Avraham Avinu had a necklace, a jewel around his neck? It means his voice was his greatest asset. His ability to communicate, his ability of speech was something that was able to heal people who were sick, bideo sehem. There were people who were so confused about the world, about the essence of life, people who had no focus, people who had no purpose, no mission at all. And Avraham Avinu stood up and he said, I'm going to communicate with you, I'm going to show you, by using the gem that I have in my garon, in my throat, in my neck, I'm going to give you the ability to understand the deeper meanings of life. And that was merape them. That made people feel differently about themselves. Sounds wonderful. When you have somebody the likes of Avraham Avinu in your life, it sounds great. What happens when Avraham Avinu dies? Yitzchak didn't take his place. He didn't have that ability. Why not? Because Yitzchak grew up in his father's home. He didn't come to this understanding. So what happens when you have somebody who really is challenged with their belief, with their understanding, with their purpose of life? You can't go to someone who didn't really figure it out. You have to go to someone like Avraham Avinu, who did come to an understanding and struggled through the same challenges. Well, there were members of that generation who were worried. What are we going to do now when we are sick? When we have problems in Inyanei Hadeos? When we have problems with understanding what our purpose in life and the world is? HaKadosh Baruch Hu Tala B'Gilgal HaChama. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took that and put it into the sun. And he said, just look around at my world, says the Chassam Sofer, and that will straighten you out. All you need to do is look at nature. See how beautiful it is. See how profound a world you live in. See how complex the world is. See how incredibly uplifted you can become just by watching what's in front of you that maybe you've never focused on. You don't need the Avraham Avinu to teach you. All you need to do is Tala B'Gilgal HaChama. Look at the sun. Look at the moon. Look at the stars. Look at the oceans. Look at everything outside in front of you and realize there is a God. Realize that God has overwhelmed us with His kindness. And says the Chasam Sofer, this really is perhaps what the Gemara is all about. This, he says, is what we talk about in the davening on Shabbos when we say, HaShamayim Misaprim Kevodkeel Umasa Yadav Magid HaRakia. We say 8 psukim in a row in the beginning of Psukah de Zimra on Shabbos, where we describe the incredible essence of what it is that the world represents, of what it is that our world actually is. Maybe we don't focus on it, but he says, right, so some suffer, think about it. 8 psukim in a row that give us that beautiful description, which make us realize in the end, Ki Hashem hu ha'elokim b'shamayim mima'al yal ha'aretz mitachas. It brings us to a greater understanding that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who not only manages all the mystical parts of our lives, who not only is involved in spiritual and celestial important activities that are going on, but v'ala aretz mitachas, in our world, down below, where we just encounter nature on a daily basis, we have the opportunity to realize that that is God Himself who provides us with that as well. So, I wish everyone a wonderful night. I appreciate learning with you. And Amir Tzashem, please.